a guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello, welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, will look back on the weekend's Scottish Cup defeat to Rangers, look ahead to this week's Scottish Premiership clash at Fir Park against Rangers, and we'll take over conversation of whatever else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Evening. Well, I suppose the best place to start, Jay, would be to congratulate yourself and your election to the Welsh Society Board. A bit of good news after a weekend of disappointment on the park.
I suppose I wouldn't say the two are comparable. I'm sure most Motherwell fans would quite happily have me not in the Welsh Society Board if it meant that we won at Ibrox on Saturday, but it's obviously a bit of good news, bit of an honour considering there was 11 candidates, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, just be prepared for us giving you hundreds of stick, because we now have to take up your mantle. On the podcast.
I can assure you I will still be as moany as ever about the society if it's required. I certainly will not be gagged, shall we say.
we'll look at the game then on Saturday in Busta. You get to a Scottish Cup tie, you're leading with 6 minutes remaining. It's such a hard one to take, to then not even find ourselves in the draw as an if or or team in the fifth round draw, completely out of the cup. Last minute heartbreak for the second time this season against Rangers at Ibrox. It's kind of one of these ones where it will kind of hurt for a while to come, unless we can get a bit of retribution on Saturday.
A horrible, horrible way to lose the game, you know. Mistakes aside, you know, to be winning with so little time left and then to lose. Awful. I don't know why, but I came away from Ibrox surprisingly jovial. Obviously I was disappointed in the defeat, and you know, it pained me at the time. But 10 minutes after it, you know, forgot about it, got on with it. I think on Saturday, when we seen the teams, the lineup, we weren't too chuffed with them. But I think once, you know, we settled in after the first maybe 10-15 minutes, you could clearly see what we knew what the plan was before the game, but you could see it was sitting okay, you know, letting them come on to us. Rangers have a lot of possession for possession's sake. It's something we've seen them do before. Then obviously, as you say, there was basically no chances whatsoever in the game up until we scored. A couple of off-shot targets for Rangers. I don't even think we had any shots until we scored. Great move, Ollie Moats. We're basically, we've blown him before in this show, and we'll blow him again, no doubt, but he's absolutely fantastic. You know, he's one chance, boom, there it is. That's the kind of player you need against teams like Rangers, you know, to gets that one chance and takes that one chance. Although, having said that, he missed one, you know, when it was 2-1 to them. I think he kicked one by the post, but I went to the toilet and missed the first goal. You know, I'm led to believe, I've not watched it back yet, to be honest with you, but I'm led to believe Hennigan was pretty poor for that, which is a shame because I thought Hennigan was actually doing no too bad. And then, you know, we've all seen what happened there. For the last one, McHugh gave McManus a strange pass. You know, it wasn't really difficult to deal with. It wasn't an awkward pass. It was just a strange decision McHugh made, to be fair, but I don't know what McManus was thinking. You know, he spent the full game bottom the ball across the park. He spent the full season bottom the ball across the park, you know, for somebody to chase. And in this instance, he plays a 5-yard, 10-yard pass into nobody. And as you say, you know, we lost the game for there. It was gutting. It's hard to take. But as I say, you know, the scenes at the goal, I think that's what got me through the Saturday, to be fair. When we scored, it was great. It was probably one of the most excited, the most buzzing I've been in a while, to be fair, involved in the football. But as you say, it was hard to take. It's a real kick in the teeth. And as you say, we can only really look forward to Saturday coming and hope that some you know, somehow we can pull a result out of the bag there.
Yeah, Jay, listening to Buster there, he kind of sounds as downbeat as almost as Mark McGee did in the post-match press interviews. I was pretty much flabbergasted by what he did come out with, particularly in relation to Scott McDonald, with McDonald coming off the bench late on in the game. McGee said that he was suffering with a back injury. It then puts that down to him having to carry the rest of the team, which is disrespectful to his playing squad. For me, I know he is prone to the kind of odd brain fart and tongue-in-cheek joke, but it's just, there's a time and place for it. And when you're hurting after exiting the Scottish Cup at an early stage yet again, and I know that Ibrox is obviously a hard place to go and we were massive underdogs for a reason, but it doesn't take any of the edge of the pain off. So to then hear him come out with crap like that again, it was hugely frustrating for me, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, Mark McGee, I suppose people are still kind of divided on the actual 90 minutes itself with regards to Mark McGee. You know, as Buster says, when we saw the team come out, I think every one of us, who, you know, up until that point, I think we'd been very optimistic, very enthusiastic, very confident about getting into the game. I think, you know, all of us agreed that although it was a difficult task, Rangers are relatively mediocre. I mean, that's, you know, two games that Ibrox have played them and they've needed two last minute goals to beat us. And you can see the way they've celebrated them, that we've really, really got under their skin since the playoffs. But, you know, there's obviously, you know, a bit of a divide in the support in terms of Mark McGee's tactics. I think in terms of tactically, the only thing he maybe got wrong for me was to play Joe Chalmers and Stevie Hamill on the same side. That's not necessarily to do with, you know, Joe Chalmers' ability or anything like that. I think you've got two players there who haven't had the best seasons, who have both been out injured. And I think to play both of them on the same side at Ibrox after a few weeks out was a poor decision. And I think we really, really struggled with that in the first half. Second half, though, I thought both came into the game a wee bit better. So overall, I think, although it was frustrating, although it was horrible to watch, and although it's not perhaps the way we would have lined up, I think you've got to accept that for what Mark McGee wanted to see happen, it happened up to the 85th minute mark. And then it's hard to really hold them accountable for what then did happen. You know, Buster mentions Hennigan at the first goal. I tend to point the blame at most of the midfield for the first goal. I think that we'd been sitting so far back up until we went 1-0 ahead that it meant that when the natural reaction was to go even further back, we were practically on our own goal line. And Waghorn has so much time to pick out Kenny Miller, it's scandalous. And then, of course, you know, McManus, 99 times out of 100, puts the, you know, the foot through that, and for some bizarre reason goes for a wee pass and it crosses. So I was quite disappointed when I heard Mark McGee's comments. I'll be honest, I've not listened to or managed to track down the whole Scott McDonald thing. I've obviously read quite a lot of it on social media and Pine Bovril and things like that. And if it was said in a serious context and quite a scathing context, against the rest of his team, then it's embarrassing, an embarrassing comment. You know, we've spoken in the past about, you know, hanging out Ainsworth to dry and things like that. As you say, he is prone to questionable comments. And I think the disappointing thing is he's a very, very experienced manager. You know, I've watched the interview that he did with MFC TV. I was surprised that that was even put online. I think last time I checked, it had about 25,000 views. And it's because it's a car crash. You know, it's not got 25,000 views because suddenly there's tens of thousands of football fans throughout the world wanting to know Mark McGee's thoughts. It's because word has spread how much of a car crash of an interview it is. And that's really disappointing, because we have a game against them on Saturday. And for me, it should be the manager's job to do his utmost to, you know, get their heads back in the game, because, you know, nobody needs to tell somebody like Stephen McManus about the mistake he made. You know, you just need to look at Stephen McManus' career history, and see how he celebrated his goal at Ibrox to know that he won't be exactly pleased that he cost us that at that game on Saturday. So nobody needs to, you know, have a go at the players. Nobody needs to be so negative in post-match interviews that you start to actually worry about whether they'll get through the night or not. For me, we should have been quite defiant, and we should have been coming out and saying that we've got a game against them on Saturday. Yes, it was hard to take, but we didn't see enough from Rangers to suggest that they're, you know, not beatable on Saturday. Because let's be honest, they're not. I mean, Rangers, we gave Rangers so much possession, and they did the square root of fuck all with it, and until we actually presented them with goal-scoring chances. So they're certainly, you know, beatable on Saturday. There is no question about that. And yet, going into the game, there is just this kind of lingering doubt or lingering negative feeling that, yes, was perhaps started by losing two goals at Ibrox late on, but has just been kind of compounded by the manager's comments, at least in that MFC TV interview that I watched. It was just really difficult to watch, and I understand he's hurting. One thing I've noticed recently is when we've won games, you know, at Inverness, and when we scored the last-minute equaliser at Aki's, you know, he's right over applauding the fans and celebrating with them. So I don't know whether it's kind of a new take on things. He's trying to have a stronger relationship with the fans by, you know, indulging in the celebrations and applauding them when we win, and, you know, wearing his heart on his sleeve and being really kind of hurt, like the rest of us when we lose in such a way. But it's not really becoming of an experienced football manager. And, you know, as I said, you just need to go onto the MFC TV, watch the interview and see how many views it's actually got. Things like that don't go viral unless they're an absolute car crash, and unfortunately that's exactly what it was.
Don't get me wrong, I can see obviously what you're saying there, but I don't really blame him for, you know, the way, if you know, I've read things saying, you know, he's putting that on, whatever, as you say, but, you know, if he's generally got it, you know, that's fair enough. These things happen. I question the club mayor, you know, putting that online. I think that's a bizarre move by the club. You know, give the guy an hour. You know, let him rethink, have a think about what he's going to say. And as you say, maybe we would have got something a bit more, a positive spin on it. But I think it's a bit of a bizarre move by Murrow and, you know, MFC TV, the media team, whatever they call themselves these days. Sorry, to record that there and then and just go, right, thanks, see you later, and put that up online. I think that was as damaging as the interview itself, to be fair.
No, I agree with that. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, if you want to look at it subjectively, I mean, it's a lose-lose situation for Mark McGee, because if Mark McGee doesn't come across as hurt or angry in the post-match interview, then it gives sort of free rein to the, you know, those who already dislike Mark McGee, to come out and say, well, look, he doesn't even care. You know, he doesn't want to be here, X, Y, Z. So the fact that he is hurting, he's clearly hurting in the interview, you know, for me, it goes too far the other way, though. He's an experienced manager, and nowadays you can't be a football manager at a decent level now without understanding that a large part of it is media. And if you can't go there and still give a constructive and, you know, an acceptable interview in those circumstances, then you're completely right. Send out your assistant manager, or, you know, refuse to do it, or ask for more time. To kind of go and give such a car crash interview, I think, is disappointing. But I do agree with you. I think that nowadays a media team, whether it's a football club, whether it's, you know, an organisation, a political party, whatever it is, a media team, press officers, PR team, whatever you want to call them. It's not just about filming interviews and then, you know, putting them up online. It's about judgment. It's about making sure you're not putting out things that are damaging. And I tend to agree. I think the idea of putting that out is questionable.
Yeah, just as you say, I don't disagree with anything you've said there either. You know, as I say, I can understand he was upset, but you know, as I say, that it's questionable in both parties there, I think, to be honest with you. STV, for example, you know, would have loved something like that. Our media team should really be looking at that and thinking, you know, we'll maybe have another go at this, or, you know, ask somebody else. Again, I made a joke to somebody that they had to do it there then because he was getting a flight to Brighton, you know, 10 minutes later. And again, whether or not he still lives in Brighton, I don't know. But as I say, you know, even if they had to come in and redo that later in the afternoon with, as you say, Faddy or, you know, one of the players or something, it was a bizarre situation all round.
Yeah, and you just actually have to look at some of the pelters that Ian Cathro has taken at Hearts since he came in. You know, for his interviews, to realise how massive a part of being a football manager nowadays that the media part is. And he does have faux pas, he does say things and that sometimes rile you or sometimes just seem, you know, stupid to say. And I don't believe for a second that Mark McGee isn't experienced and savvy enough to know that interview was just a bit ridiculous. By all means, be angry, be upset, be whatever it is, but it came across more the sort of the ramblings of a spoiled brat rather than anything else.
Yeah, it was a bit childish.
And one day into your role on the Welsh Society board and you're already swearing in the podcast, is this what's happened?
Not really. I'm sure you'll find I've swore many times before, Spar.
I just had forgotten about those other times. Apologies for any offensive language you may have heard during...
To be fair, we're recording at 25 past midnight. We're past the watershed, regardless of what time people listen to it.
Well, the day after the cup tie, the under-20s did have a much more successful time of it with a 4-3 win at Firhill against Partick Thistle. They were down 2-0 early doors, battling back to 3-2 up, but went 3-3, and then Dylan Mackin got a late winner to take them into the semi-finals, where they'll meet either Hibs or Celtic. So after winning it last year, kind of been able to carry on that success, Buster, and that's very promising to see. And hopefully in 5-10 years, when these guys are all on the first team, then we'll be regulars in cup finals and semi-finals.
You'd love to think so, wouldn't you? To be honest with you, I've not even had the chance to watch those highlights either. But you know, as on Sunday when we were all you know, texting back and forth, was it 5, 6, 7 minutes in, you know, we were saying it was 2-0 to Partick Thistle, and you know, at that point we were thinking, oh, it's obviously not going to go the same way as it went last year. But credit to them, within, I think it was 15 minutes or something like that, they scored 3 goals themselves. I work with a boy who, the boy Nisbet that plays with Partick Thistle, I work with his brother, and he was there, and he was saying, it was a pretty even game. There was points where Thistle were looking maybe like the better team, but he says like the strength of guys like Dylan Mackin, you know, they're just a lot bigger, a lot more physical than some of the Partick Thistle players, and that seems to have won it on the day there. And I don't know if that's encouraging to hear or if it's maybe just because Thistle were a bit weird, but you know, if you take Chris Cadden as an example, you know, he's a young boy coming out of that team, he's built a tank. You know, if that works in his favour, hopefully it will work in these young boys' favours as well as they come through. But you know, it's good to see that even when they go behind, and you know, when Thistle equalise as well, they still had enough in them to go and drive and get that winner as well.
Yeah, that's a massive thing, isn't it, Jay? That the winning mentality is clearly there, and to have developed that at a young age, where perhaps it's quite often levelled at the development teams and everything else, that the results aren't the be all and end all, but it can't be a bad thing going deep into these cup tournaments to be having success in the league as well. They're doing well, and hopefully the club now reap the rewards of that.
Absolutely. I mean, that is, you know, we've spoke before about the kind of the excitement about some of the young players coming through, but if you don't have the mentality to make the step up and to get through difficult times. You know, for example, you know, losing two goals at Ibrox in the cup, if you don't have, if you're a young player and you don't have the mentality to respond to that in the right way, then you're going to struggle in top flight football. And it's really encouraging to see that not just the winning mentality that they obviously have, but that mentality of never saying die and kind of carrying on. Because, you know, 2-0 down, I think went back to 2-1, and then Turnbull missed a penalty and then went on to score. So, you know, to go down, so, you know, by two goals and miss a penalty, it would have been easy to kind of chuck in the towel, but they kept plugging away, got the win. And, you know, without knowing too much about, you know, the behind the scenes with under 20s and things like that, I think, you know, when you've got Stevie Craigan as your manager, Stevie Craigan, we all know, is, you know, a fierce competitor and, you know, probably has one of the best mentalities that you would like to, you know, if you want, if you've got any players or ex-players with the kind of mentality that you would like your young players to kind of adopt, I think Stevie Craigan would be right up there. He has the mentality of a winner. He might have been playing for, you know, a Motherwell side at times that perhaps didn't win too many times, but you just had to look at, you know, Craig's reactions when he won any game of football to know that he has the mentality of a winner. He's the mentality of someone who would just, you know, run through brick walls, chase lost causes, and, you know, would never give up. And I think that it would be naive to think that Craigan's not had a massive impact on the mentality of a lot of these young players. So it's another reason to be positive. It'll obviously be a really difficult semi-final, but the you know, the cup final last year at Hampden was a fantastic occasion, so it'd be great to get past either Hibs or Celtic and get another wee day out to Hampden.
Yeah, we'll follow that with interest. I think it's the game's, the semi-final game's got to be played before the 24th of February, I'm sure it is, so we'll know our opposition pretty soon, and then hopefully we'll be booking a wee Wednesday night to Hampden in the near future.
It also, you know, highlights what we were talking about last week in terms of, you know, the youth product and things like semi-final again. I mean, I don't know how we were sitting in the league still, but sitting there top three or four last week or whatever it was, it just goes to show that, you know, the Project Brave thing, it's maybe not all about your fancy commodities and, you know, the best facilities. No need out, they obviously help, but, you know, you're going to need young players in their way, ambition and drive, and maybe somebody like Craggs, as Jay says, you know, to push them on and, you know, basically pass that winning mentality on.
Yeah, we'll go on and actually talk about the reaction to the podcast last week with Alan Burrows, and it was possibly better received than we would have imagined. It would have been a great response and a lot of differing opinions. Certainly, there's no doubt that Alan kind of captivated a lot of the Motherwell fans with his views and kind of made them aware of things that perhaps they weren't too clear on in terms of the intricacies of Project Brave. Just got to wonder now where it kicks on, and I believe that Malky Mackay is actually visiting clubs this week, a 4-day kind of whirlwind tour around the clubs to describe his vision and where he sees Scottish football going under his watch. It's going to be interesting to see how it develops over the next kind of weeks and months, because it's certainly an issue that deeply affects Motherwell Football Club, and Motherwell Football Club are clearly very passionate about the kind of the wrongs of it, as Alan described in great detail over the 90 minutes of the podcast last week.
Well, that's it. I mean, at the end of the day, we can come on a fans podcast and slag off Project Brave and slag off the SFA and Stuart Reagan and all the rest of it, and people can, you know, make their own minds up of how knowledgeable or, you know, how little we know of the situation when it's, you know, just simple fans talking about it. But when it's someone like Alan Burrows who knows the intricacies of it, knows exactly what Project Brave is about, at least based on what they were told it was about in October. You know, it's worth reminding ourselves that he did say that they've not really heard anything since. But when it's someone like that, then it obviously gives it a whole new dimension, because you're not just listening to hearsay or a couple of football fans who have read a few articles and a bit on a message board. That's, you know, someone who is practically 24/7 charged with ensuring that the future of Motherwell and Motherwell's best interests are really, you know, at the forefront. And it was absolutely clear from speaking to him that Project Brave just does not meet those requirements at all. I had already kind of made my mind up that it sounded terrible to begin with, and you know, I don't think I quite understood just how bad a prospect it was for Motherwell and their youth system until Alan was on the podcast. So it's a really worrying situation to be in. I think the more you kind of now hear from Stuart Regan, perhaps there's a climb down maybe beginning to, you know, I've seen recently they're talking about 16 teams, but again, that perhaps might be, you know, as Alan said, you know, an 8 and an 8. So who knows? Who knows how it's going to actually proceed? It's really hard. It's really difficult because I don't think we've had something quite, you know, of this nature in Scottish football. Often, I think that fans like ourselves will often accuse our club or have a go at our club for not speaking out and not, you know, perhaps taking the SFA to task. But that certainly can't be, you know, said in this regard. I think, you know, both Alan and Mark McGee have come out and absolutely slated it. I mean, if you listen to Alan on the podcast last week, it's obviously done in, you know, a trademark, very kind of well-spoken, well-thought-out, diplomatic way. But, you know, the underlying message is that Project Brave is a travesty in its current form, and it shouldn't be allowed to go through. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. It'd also, you know, be interesting to know what Malcolm Mackay's actual input in it is, because as far as I'm aware, Malcolm Mackay was in the running for the job when Project Brave was still, you know, was on the table, was kind of signed, sealed, delivered as of October. So, you know, what input has Malcolm Mackay even had to it? I mean, does he even agree with it? There's a lot of questions still to be asked, and you know, hopefully, if it doesn't get scrapped, hopefully at least gets reformed so that it isn't the absolute, you know, shambles that it appears to be.
It appears to have been Brian McClure who sort of started this before he left the role. A couple of articles I read suggested, you know, McClure had started this project. Obviously, we, you know, people who probably are still at the SFA and things like that, but it seemed to be that McClure had started it, and as you say, Malky Mackay just seems to have walked straight in it. So no matter what your opinion is of Malky Mackay, he could maybe, you know, win a few fans over if he has a right good look at this, and as you say, maybe tweaks it a bit, or, you know, as you say, completely remodels it. But I think, to be fair, the first couple of things I read said it was Brian McClure's ideas.
Yeah, you'd have to think as well that having such a positive result in the Youth Cup, I know that I've seen there that results aren't the be-all and end-all, but surely it's just yet another reminder to these people that Motherwell are enjoying great success at that level. So hopefully it does kind of prove that we're still kicking a ball at that level and we're having a lot of success, because it is concerning to think that we will not be one of these top 8 teams should it go through, and that this kind of rejuvenation we're having at youth level would all just fall away as a result of one man's plans, and as you said, Buster, a man's plans that then left the job after a short period in the role. So that's kind of what struck out at me last week during that podcast, that you've had the Mark Vaughter, you've had Brian McClure, you've now got Malky Mackay, all these guys coming in with their own vision, but the first two certainly, they didn't hang about enough, or they didn't see it through to its final conclusion, and that is a concerning thing for me, because I think if Project Brave is to go through, then there would be a hell of a lot of repair to have to be done following it, whether Malky Mackay stays on or not.
Well, I mean, do any of us, knowing Malky Mackay, you know, what age he is, his career up until now, why he hasn't had a club for the last couple of years, and now the opportunity he's been given to kind of repair his reputation at the SFA, do any of us, I mean, maybe you guys are different from me, I mean, is there anybody here who genuinely thinks that he's going to be there for the 5 or 10 years required? Because I certainly don't. I think after about maybe 6 months to a year, in the land of football, all is forgiven, because he's, you know, it's one of those ones where often maybe clubs don't want to touch someone, don't want to be the first ones to kind of, you know, give him that first job. But now the SFA have done it, I think you're looking 6 months to a year and a championship club job comes up and bye-bye Malky Mackay, because I'm sure the SFA are giving him a big wage, and I don't know quite how important money is to Malky Mackay, but I think he would still certainly see himself as a football manager first and foremost. And, you know, if we can't keep guys like Walter Smith and Alex McLeish in charge of the national side when club teams come along, I certainly can't see Malky Mackay staying as performance director.
Well, that's going to be an even more kind of worrying element of it, isn't it? Because did Malky Mackay's come in there and said that it's going to take him a decade to achieve what he wants to achieve? And you kind of... That is concerning, and you've kind of brought it to my attention. I hadn't really thought about the kind of the longer term, but you're right, it is kind of very unlikely that you'll have that. You'll spend 10 years, you're saying there, it's pretty unlikely you'll stay 5, and you're possibly correct there. So it's just, you see, I don't have many issues with Mackay getting the job, to be honest with you. But my major issue is more the fact that you've got to be looking at someone long term in there, and to fail to do that in the past, and it looks like they're going to just basically make the same mistakes over again. And also, I want to clarify the fact I said I've not got an issue with Mackay getting the job, in terms of I think that Malky Mackay was always going to get another job in football. Yes, perhaps it shouldn't be in the guise of working with kids. Teams in terms of his ability to be a role model is questionable. Working with the women's team again, the previous there makes him questionable. But at the same time, the powers that be have decided that he's capable of doing this job. He's now in this job, so we've not really got much other choice than just to kind of like it or lump it type of thing. And just hope that he's a success in it, and that he has a kind of reformed character that is going to make the right decisions for both the Scottish game and also for our youth teams, and in particular Motherwell, because let's face it, we're selfish like that, and you've got to look after your own self-interests. And I think that was quite interesting as well, because most of Alan's things that he spoke about last week were all based in self-interest from Motherwell Football Club, but you still found yourself reading posts in Pie and Bovril and various other places with fans of other football clubs completely agreeing with Alan's views and things. And I think that is telling, when kind of Scottish football fans have united against this and what is kind of perceived as an injustice in it.
But yeah, as you say, you know, although, as you say, we look at it selfishly, you know, Alan did say last week that it's even without looking at it through Motherwell Dint Expects, you know, it's a bad idea in general to leave out, you know, certain clubs. You know, I think I said on one of the forums, Dundee United are going through a bad spell now, but in the last 30, 40 years, they're probably, you know, the fifth biggest club in the country, and, you know, they were one of the teams that were supposedly going to miss out. Just to go back to Malky Mackay and Jay's point on that as well, it's one that I hadn't really thought about either, and I think it's Jesse's. You know, he gets a shout, he's gone. You know, he's a young for a football manager. I think he's 43 or something like that. He did carve out a wee mini career, you know, a decent sort of mini career in England before he royally screwed it up. And as you say, and quite rightly so, you know, the world of football, the world of employment in general, you can't have your past held against you forever. So, you know, there's drunk drivers, there's people who beat women involved in football, and it's always going to be the same. It's going to be the same in any employment, to be fair. But I think as soon as he gets a shout for any sort of job that he sees suitable for himself, he's off, whether it be 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. You know, I think 5 years is pushing it, but as Jay says, you know, he's got a job now, he's got a paying wage, but I feel he's just waiting on that shout to get back into football management.
I should point out that, I mean, you know, in terms of Malky Mackay himself, I'm not approaching it in a purely neutral point of view, I mean, I wouldn't have him anywhere near the job. I completely understand the idea that you get a second chance, of course you do. But for me, if you're a manager at, you know, Championship or Premier League level, and you, you know, spend a period of time sending text message after text message, whether it's racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, homophobia, you know, he was ticking all the boxes. To then walk in, to get your second chance at the job that we've given them, for me, is an embarrassment. It's an absolute embarrassment for the Scottish FA. By all means, they should get a second chance, and that second chance should come further down the ladder again, you know, perhaps League 2, League 1, rebuild his reputation, prove he's a reformed character to, you know, clubs higher up, and then, you know, start to climb the ladder again. To walk into what is a lucrative job with an, you know, with his country's national football association, that part of his remit, as Sparra says, is going to be, you know, the grassroots, and, you know, the entire women's game and things like that. It's a particularly low point in Scottish football recently. I think it's an absolute embarrassment, and I think, you know, it's all very well saying, well, the SFA obviously think it can do the job. The SFA don't have a clue. You know, we've said that for years. Stuart Regan in particular should have gone a long ago. So, to be perfectly honest, if Stuart Regan thinks that Malky Mackay is the ideal candidate for the job, then that for me is further proof that he should have been nowhere near it.
Just to back myself up and back yourself up there as well, I 100% agree with everything you said there as well. You know, I was just saying in broad terms, people get second chances, rightly or wrongly, as you say, depending, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, high up the ladder or not. But I agree with 100% with everything you said.
Probably as well look at the next couple of games after 2 or 3 weeks without a league game, then we're right back into it with the game on Saturday at Fir Park, the early kick-off against Rangers, and then we'll move on to Tuesday night. Is it still Tuesday? Have they moved it back to the Wednesday? We would travel to Dingwall to take on Ross County, and then shortly followed after that will be the Hearts game. Again, an early kick-off the following Saturday. We'll have recorded a podcast certainly before the Hearts game. I don't know whether we'll have covered the Ross County game by the time we actually record next week, but we'll wait and see. It does kind of straight away just show you how much a farce the winter break was, really, that you've got to start kind of pushing in midweek fixtures and everything else in the later part of January, when they didn't deem that the weather was going to be good enough or that we needed a break in the early part of January. It's pretty nonsensical, really.
Yeah, I mean, as I think I've said before, you know, the winter break for me just doesn't really make any sense. I know Brendan Rodgers was talking it up, but, you know, this is Scotland. You don't have, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of guaranteed frozen weather and blizzards and then everything's rosy again. You know, we could have blizzards all through February. I think that in a country like Scotland, like the Scandinavian countries, if you're that concerned about winter weather, you have to switch to summer football. If you're not prepared to switch to summer football, you just carry on. You're right, I think, you know, having to go up to Dingwall midweek when that game could have easily been played the Saturday before the cup game, you know, I find it a bit bizarre. I don't really see the benefits out with allowing teams like Celtic to swan off to Dubai and things like that, and you know, allow Rangers to go and play Leipzig. I don't really see the big benefit. But, you know, it's obviously good to have it back. If anything, it just kind of whets your appetite a wee bit, not having the football for a few weeks. And, you know, you're obviously roaring to get back into it when it does kind of come along again.
And quite a weird twist, I'm not actually going to go into too much detail about the Rangers game, just due to the fact that it is 12:45 in the morning, and despite it being the early hours of Wednesday, I can't think of a league game that I've been less up for quite some time. Just
I don't know about that.
I am the exact opposite. Bring them on.
Well, not exactly. I mean, as I said earlier, yes, the last 5 minutes were poor. You know, a couple of terrible mistakes and sitting too deep. You know, at the end of the day, if you're 1-0 up in a cup tie, the very least you should be 1-0 up in a cup tie with 5 minutes to go, the very least you should be getting is a replay. So I don't think anybody's pretending that it wasn't a sore one to lose 2-1. And as I said, Mark McGee's interview just compounded matters. But if you look at the game overall, Rangers are, as I've said before, a mediocre side at best. I mean, we've not been particularly good this season at all, particularly away from home. And yet, Rangers did absolutely nothing against us until we gave Kenny Miller the chances. Obviously, it remains to be seen what kind of team we'll play. I think that who gets, you know, the nod on Saturday is anybody's guess, because nobody knows what Mark McGee's going to go with. But I see absolutely no reason to be fearful of that Rangers side on Saturday. And I would be very disappointed if we didn't at least come away from a very close game again.
I think, you know, as bad as McGee's interview was, you know, when he was asked about what he said, I've not said nothing, I don't know what to say. I'll go away, I'll have a think about it, and I'll come back. So, you know, he'll go to Brighton, he'll come back, he'll tell them his wee story he was planning on telling them, and hopefully that'll fire them right up for Saturday. So, as you say, you know, it was a sickener. The way we lost it was an absolute sickener. There's only one way we can go over that, basically, and that's by going out and trying to beat them on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm just kind of struggling with the... I think that the downer caused by watching some of the reaction to the match and then kind of having them visit again, and you know what it's like when they do come to town. It's not a very pleasant experience. So maybe come the latter part of the week when work's out the road on Friday, then it'll be a bit more positivity from me. But at the moment, I'm struggling. And Jay, full credit to yourself for making the trip up to County in the midweek. Again, that's a tough place to go, and against a team that we are fighting out with, whether it be for a place in the top six, whether it be to avoid that playoff position. These are two big games back to back.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's difficult to kind of comment on the County game without knowing, you know, what team we're going to play on Saturday and how that's going to go. But County, again, it's a winnable game. It's a game that, you know, as you say, we're kind of stuck in that, still in that kind of group, and the, you know, perhaps from fifth, sixth position downwards, where everybody can beat each other. So there's no reason to go to County and not look for a win. If we can go to the likes of Inverness, you know, just after Christmas and win, we can certainly go to County and do the same. So, I mean, again, you know, I don't want to be kind of over-the-top optimistic, but, you know, if anybody can pinpoint what they saw on Saturday that suddenly makes Rangers this really fearful opposition this coming Saturday, then I would love to hear it, because out with presenting Kenny Miller with two really easy goals, I just don't see it. So if we can kind of play, perhaps not the same way, I would like us to be a bit less defensive and actually go and you know, have more confidence in ourselves, because, as I've said, yeah, Rangers are perhaps decent enough at the back, but when you give them possession or ask them to attack you, they are hopeless, absolutely hopeless. I mean, we think how often we've ranted about Craig Sampson and how terrible he is and how he gifts teams results, and yet, they barely tested them. I mean, Rangers are a poor, poor side. In the context of Rangers, I should say, I mean, you know, they're still better than us, but they're certainly not far away better than us that we have to worry about them. So if we can go into Saturday, take the game to them, obviously still stay organised, but be motivated, be confident, be optimistic, and get a good performance and hopefully a good result, then if we can carry that in to going to Dingwall on the Tuesday, then I think there's a win for us there. So, you know, 4 points from the next two games is certainly not out of the equation.
I was going to say, 4 points in the next two games, I'd be ecstatic with, to be honest with you. Any more than that, I'd be delighted to be, obviously, but 4 points in the next two games would be fantastic for me, and I don't really care whether it's a draw with Rangers or a win against Rangers or a draw with County, you know, but I'd like to get one over on Rangers again, obviously, but 4 points, that would be ideal for me.
Well, I mean, even just to go back, we were talking earlier about the under-20s mentality. For me, the biggest thing for Saturday and subsequently Tuesday, because, you know, what happens on Saturday will have a massive impact on what happens 3 days later in Dingwall. For me, it's the biggest thing is going to be mentality. If you know, McGee hasn't, you know, kicked them, you know, got them going again and got them focused. And if we are still, you know, tossing and turning over what went on in the last five minutes, then perhaps Sparra's right to be pessimistic. And for me, mentality is the main thing. If we can actually realise that Rangers are there for the taking at Firth Park, and if we can, you know, go into the game believing that, then there's no reason we can't get a result. But if we do subscribe to the sort of the same emotional reaction to Saturday as Mark McGee did in the immediate aftermath, then you know, perhaps you're right, Sparra.
He's devastated.
He's fell asleep.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where he's off to, but as I say, 4 points would suit me fantastic. Sparra.
Ah, well, he's either fell asleep or he's so pessimistic about Saturday that he's just decided to juke. But I think we'd pretty much finished, so we could just round it off now rather than trying to get him back.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we just finish there and tell him that, you know, fuck him, he's done.
Well, thanks very much, Sparra, for juking us. Cheers, Buster.
No bother, mate. Thanks very much to yourself as well.
Right, well, you've been listening to the MFC podcast. We should be back either just before the county game or just after it next week. Until then, goodbye.